DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
Hey, Danny.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Sam.
How are you doing?
Hi, Dan.
You having fun?
So much.
I think the show started now.
Oh, has it?
I think so.
I guess I should stop talking like this then.
No, I think you should do the whole show like this.
Okay.
Add a few meh's in there, too. So this is not another podcast, like you didn't know that. And we are Bryceless again.
Again.
Fucking parenthood, I'm telling you.
He just doesn't like you anymore, James. It's okay, dude.
I'm fine with that, but at least fucking be honest.
Yeah, it's asking a lot.
I'm still wondering why you still come around.
I feel sorry for you?
No.
Honestly, I don't know.
You'd have to have sympathy in your heart, and you don't.
Wait, I'm not the cold bastard. That's Bryce's job.
No, Bryce is the murdering bastard.
Well, still, you know.
So, last week we discussed Stephen King books being turned into movies. And and was it, were we still on when we came up with this idea, or was it we were
No,
off?
It was after.
Okay.
It was just after, yeah.
So after the show ended, we tried to think of what we're going to do this week, and we came up with the idea of, why don't we talk about books we'd like to see made into movies? And we also added the caveat, why not a comic series or graphic novel that hasn't been made? So this is all books or books and comics that have not yet been made into movies. And we're going to...
That I am privy to.
We're going to have fun and try and fan cast those and maybe see like what we'd like to see happen. Because let's face it, you can't get a whole entire book made into a movie. There's stuff you have to cut.
I don't know. I think my choice might actually be okay because it's kind of a short book in and of itself.
Is it Green Eggs and Ham?
No, no. That was a close second choice, okay? That was a close second. I was also thinking Fox and Socks, but I didn't want to cheat.
You picked one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
Shut up! It's my movies!
So, who wants to go first? I'm looking at Dan.
I'll go first. I don't mind.
Samantha's lucky because I can't look at her.
I'll jump right under the bus, and that's okay. The book that I wanted to see turned into a movie is a book called The Cure. And it's by an author, Sonia Levitan. And the
and
whole
it's about The Cure.
Yeah, you wish. No, it's good, and so that's why I read it. No, the whole concept is it starts off in like the year 2407. And society has basically been reduced to wearing the same type of clothing, and everybody has a mask over their face to kind of take away individuality and diversity. And so they've outlawed everything that is, you know, music, art, anything. You are basically just living. And since this has gone on, the life expectancy of humanity is about 250 years. So once you hit 250 years, you get put down, essentially. But the only other thing that would get you put down ahead of that is if you start deviating from the process, you know, and you start thinking musically or you start thinking artistically or just individually at all. And so the main character, he starts dreaming of music. He starts dreaming of this flute music. And he starts telling his twin that, you know, he's having these dreams, and he gets sent before the Committee of Elders, and the elders say, okay, you have two options. Option A, we're going to recycle you, and we're going to recycle your twin just to be safe, or you can undergo this process called the cure. And the cure is, they basically sit him in a machine, and it's essentially VR. but it's living the experience. So they send him his consciousness back to a Jewish boy named Johannes during 1349 Germany, right as the Black Plague is really starting to break out. And the book really delves into a lot of, you know, anti-Semitic kind of notions, you know, the bias that people have, and the fact that, you know, his family was only allowed to be moneylenders, and since Jewish people bathed regularly, they were less inclined to catch the plague. So everybody around him started blaming the Jewish people for the plague, and it led to their untimely demise. And it's a really, really fascinating look into how to perceive a situation like this coming from a pure, you know, non-artistic background. I really loved the book. I thought it was amazing and incredibly well put together, but it's only like, I want to say it's maybe a 400-page novel. It's actually fairly short for what it is. And so I think it, A, would make an amazing movie just because it touches on a lot of subjects that I think are very poignant, as well as it would allow for some actors to really bring out their dramatic side.
Do you think, though, in this political climate, a movie with pretty much a lot of anti-Semitism would fly? Well, I don't think it would get made.
Well, and that's the beauty part about it, though, is this is supposed to be somebody seeing that the differences between people led to their demise, and that's the whole process of the cure, is to basically scare them straight, you know. But what they come to understand towards the end of the book is the things that he lived through, the things that he saw while living in this, you know, this boy, essentially, it was important to keep that diversity. And although people will beat you down, one of the main scenes that they have, and I don't know if either of you have heard about this, but in Germany, they basically dug a big ass pit, put scaffolding all the way around it, and marched the Jewish people of the village down into that scaffolding and lit the fucking thing on fire to try to purge the plague. And again, it shows that, okay, A, people are really fucking stupid and need to realize that they do stupid shit for absolutely no justified reasons, but also that culture and heritage was, until the end, as they marched down, they were playing their music on their flutes. They were playing, you know, their tunes that were important to them. They were praying. They were doing these things that still were important to them and essentially did lead to their death. But when Jem comes out of it, they're like, well, how do you feel? And he's like, I'm okay. I'm much better. Thank you. And he goes home and he talks to his twin and he takes his mask off and he goes, I've learned some amazing things and this is more important. And it's a really beautiful book for that. It's like, yeah, fuck you, anti-Semites.
It's a book with a lesson. I don't think it would get made, unfortunately.
I would hope it would, because, again, it would be very helpful for people to get this kind of stuff.
It would be, and that's exactly why it wouldn't get made.
Hey, this is my fan theory, okay? So eat shit. So for the character of Jem, as well as Johannes, I would cast, I have it written down, Tom Holland, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Because he's supposed to be a younger individual, and since you don't see his face in the beginning, you only see it at the end, it would actually make kind of a neat little reveal that, oh, well, you know, you're basically the same fucking person, you just lived through the ages. And I would have cast Dame Judi Dench as one of the elders and Chaim Topol as Johannes' father. Only because those two characters are amazing actors, although their parts aren't that overly prevalent, I guess, it would still be good characters to have. So, yeah. That was my first choice. I'm going to bring the room down.
I like it. I feel like a movie with such or book with such strong anti-Semitism, even though it's the basis for a lesson.
Well, let's put it this way. Sonya Levitan was actually a Holocaust survivor. She has rights to this bitch.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that especially in this politically charged climate.
I think this is the most important time to test people and show them that, hey, don't be a dick and, you know, vet your sources. So when somebody cries, you know, plague spreaders, maybe look into it a bit more. Maybe find out a little bit about it before you start fucking torching people. Just saying. Vet your sources, bitches.
No, it sounds like a great book, and I think it's something I might look up and try and read. But as far as a movie goes,
I wish it would get made, but yeah, I understand. I don't see it happening.
I think if it did get made, they would take all of that anti-Semitism stuff out.
But that's kind of the baseline
of it. I know, but you know what?
It's kind of like doing...
And they will change it because...
But it's kind of like doing Fiddler on the Roof without them being kicked out of their own, you know, homes because they're Jewish on a Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think, James, you're going a little conservative on this. I think it would absolutely be made. But the problem Hollywood's going to run into, if it's made, is that it's not going to be handled well.
Yeah. And that's a big issue. I think...
You kind of do what my boyfriend does when he gets around certain people or like certain things. He's just like, okay, now don't say these things. And I'm like, I will say what I want when I want. We're going to make whatever movie we want when we want, how we want, you know? So it's just,
I think you
tend to get overly, you don't have like those conservative views, but I mean, you get overly conservative with what would be made and what would be okay with society. I think I'm with Danny on this, that these things should be plastered right up there to get people to think and look and...
No. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm with you. I totally think it should be made. Mm-hmm. And I think it should be as close to the source material. I'm coming at it from a...
Like realistic,
a Hollywood
logical
insider
point. Yeah.
Thing. And
oh, gotcha. Okay.
In this day and age, they would look at that and go, number one, people don't want to go to the movie. The premise of it sounds really great.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is by far one of my favorite books that I've ever
read. But they're not going to make a movie with a lesson like that, especially one that's so in your face. They would change the lesson, and they would take – I think they would – really, the thing that they would take out is the Jewish thing.
Yeah, which sucks.
They would try and keep the plague in there, but they wouldn't – they would get it all historically inaccurate, and they would – like Samantha said, they would mishandle it and essentially ruin the story.
But again, this is my fan theories, and I would like to see it done. So, come on, Hollywood. Don't fucking drop the ball on this one. This is actually kind of important.
Samantha, you got one?
So, the one that I sort of have the actresses for in my head was the graphic novel. So, I don't read a lot of graphic novels and comic books. I read some every now and then, and There's a couple, Danny, that you have recommended I have not read yet, but the only one that I really read, and it's only got a couple issues out, so I'm just like, I want more, is Extinction Parade, and I've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah.
It's by Max Brooks, who's Mel Brooks' son, and it's about the zombie plague has happened, and there's vampires in this universe, too. And the vampires are like, yes, it's a free-for-all. We're going to eat all we want until one finally stands up and says, guys, these zombies, we got to help the humans do something about this because they're going to eat our food source. And we're not going to have a food source anymore, and we're going to die.
Yeah.
So it's about their survival then. So they have to take – but they still don't want the humans to know that they exist. So they're trying to, like, low-key take off. You know, take out zombies, and it focuses around two female vampires that have been around for a really long time, and the first two women that came to mind were Zoe Saldana and Rosalind Sanchez.
Nice.
I like it.
Yeah, because both, they're sexy women, they both have dance backgrounds, and that was kind of important to me in the, like, fan casting of this, because there's this one, like, sort of one vampire from another culture that comes by, and she is essentially dancing on top of the zombie hordes, crushing their skulls as she goes.
Nice.
She's made up like this dance martial art where you stay above the crowd, the horde. They're not going to eat them anyway, but you also keep your hands out of it. You don't get any blood in your mouth that way because that can weaken them, stuff like that. You know, all that coagulated blood that they can't use as sustenance. So, you know, having like the long limbed and strong and, you know, sexy women doing this, I thought that was, you know, really cool. And, so, I mean, those are the two main characters. They're the only ones I really cast. I was going to do this at work, but at the same time, we actually had work to do today. So I was like, damn it.
Damn it.
I know, the one day.
It's what breaks are for.
Now, is this an ongoing series or is this like a one and done kind of thing?
It's still ongoing. I think it's just been slow going.
Fair enough.
The first two books are out. I think book three is out. If not, it's going to be soon. So I'm a little like...
So this could potentially be a series of movies.
It could, yeah, or a TV, or like an HBO TV show.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't turn into The Walking Dead, I'm good.
That's fair.
Or end like Game of Thrones.
Yes, exactly.
I knew you were going there. And I was like, am I going to say it first, or is James?
Nice.
Yes, so that's that one.
I like it.
I want to check that out. So I actually had a really hard time with this because there was two series of books that I would like to see done. One series of books they started doing, but it was so god awful that I just want to forget that and start from scratch.
Right.
The other one is actually one I knew Bryce would want to do, and he actually introduced me to the series. So in honor of Bryce, I'm going to talk about the Night Angel trilogy by Brent Weeks. It's three books, as you would expect.
Trilogies? That's bullshit. Isn't there
and
five
it,
in
it
that?
It basically follows the rise of this homeless kid in becoming essentially the world's greatest assassin and becoming the myth that is the Night Angel.
All right.
It's set kind of in a fantasy world. There's like a lot of elements of like medieval times fantasy type, but there's also like small elements of like sci-fi futuristic stuff.
Okay.
There's a lot of magic in it and things like that. It's a really great story. If kid loses his sword and has to forge another one, and it ends up being like the sword everyone is trying to kill him for, the one that he forges, and he's learning all these great moves to be the world's greatest assassin, and ends up leading this rebellion against this king and everything. It's really it's a fun read. Huh. It reads fast.
Gotcha.
Well, the first and last book do. The second book's kind of a slog, but. Yeah. You get halfway through it and it's like, then it whips by. As far as casting goes, I would cast the main character of Kylar as Andrew Garfield. He's long, he's lanky, he looks like he can contort himself into you know, odd shapes, a la Spider-Man. I think he'd be really great for that. His trainer, master, Durzo Blint. I'd actually like to see Ving Rhames.
All right.
Yeah, big black burly guy, low voice, teaching him all the moves. And then for Doll Girl, who's his love interest. I know they were in a movie together already, but I'd really like to see Emma Stone as his love interest of Aline / Doll Girl.
All right.
You can't go wrong with Emma Stone.
No,
I mean,
you really can't.
She's cute. She can do multiple different things.
And the character's kind of a chameleon, so it really works.
Yeah, she could do plain Jane. She can do, you know, classy. You know, I don't know. I like her. I've always liked her.
Yeah, she's really, really great. And I think the two of the... Seeing the Amazing Spider-Man series with the two of them, I think the chemistry is there. So I don't know. That's what I'd like to see. It would be a really great fantasy movie. And other than The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, we haven't had a super great fantasy movie in a while.
True enough.
So, do you have a comic book?
Yes, I do. I do, actually. And this was...
Yes, I do.
I have lots. No, I actually had a lot of fun with this because, you know, I was going over a lot of the comic books that I love and I really enjoy. And When it came right down to it, I was like, you know, I really want to see someone do Evil Ernie and do it right. So Evil Ernie, for those who don't know, was a comic book series that came out in like the early 90s. And the whole principal concept was this kid had kind of grown up in an abusive house and started seeing things and hearing voices. And so his parents basically threw him into an insane asylum until like he turned, I want to say like 16, 17. And this guy called Dr. Price comes in with this new invention called the Dream Probe, which is basically going to go in and kind of help him unlock whatever the hell it is that's messing with him so he can kind of, you know, psycho it out of it. The problem with it was, is when he did that, Ernie met Lady Death. And when Lady Death introduced herself to Ernie, she basically told him, okay, I'm going to endow you with a lot of powers. And the only way you and I can truly be together and be happy, because I'm the only person who actually loves you, is to kill every living creature on the planet. So Ernie kind of goes into a state of psycho killerness, and he's basically left on shutdown for a while. And Price blames himself for this whole problem that he has completely flipped his shit. So a new doctor comes in, Mary Young, and she's got a new idea based off of the Dream Probe. And when she goes in to do it, the machine blows up with Ernie, but he doesn't die. He just kind of gets his powers unlocked and becomes the psycho monstrous killer that can possess corpses, use small amounts of telekinetic energy. He's damn near indestructible, and he has a sentient smiley face button on his lapel that talks shit. And so basically the story is him trying to produce Megadeth to be with Lady Death while Dr. Price and Dr. Young try to fight him back and try to beat him. And the whole comic book series is kind of like the back and forth, like they think they have him down and then he comes back. And they keep trying to work out ways to get rid of him and put an end to him, but Evil Ernie is kind of eternal, so it's kind of a non-stop struggle. So the people I had cast for that was Evil Ernie. I wanted James McAvoy to play him, because there's a certain level of psychotic that I think he can pull off.
Well, especially after seeing Split.
Oh, yeah. Dude, absolutely. Yeah. Lady Death, I would cast Christina Hendricks. Because, well, she would look the part, and just being vile and malicious,
she
can
busty
pull.
Enough, yeah.
No shit. Dr. Price, I want Bruce Willis. Because he's old enough and surly enough to really be able to pull that off. And Dr. Mary Young, I wanted Zoe Saldana, too. So I thought that was pretty funny when you cast her in yours. I was like, oh, she's getting a lot of work out of us. But yeah, those were my main picks, because honestly, everybody else in the story is kind of a side character or a later development, so I mean, this could become a very long-running TV series, but I would love to at least see the first collection of comics, the first graphic novel of Evil Ernie turn into a film. And because, I mean, it's just full of all kinds of bloody, nasty, destructive shit, and it's so beautiful. It's been my favorite comic book since I was, well, A, too young to read it, but I think I was probably about 7 years old when I got my first Evil Ernie, and it was just, yeah, kind of blew me away. So yeah, that's my comic book pick.
Samantha, since you did a comic book, do you want to do a book?
Yeah, I was just thinking of the one that I was just trying to, like, cast some of the one that I was thinking of. I have a couple books, actually, but I had...
You get one.
I had two fiction and two nonfiction.
I'm just being a jerk.
Stop it.
Let me be a jerk.
No.
Yeah.
So, the first novel fiction that I was thinking would do really well is, have you ever read The Museum of Extraordinary Things?
I have not.
No.
It's about this business that runs on oddities. It's like an oddities museum.
Oh, okay.
So Ripley's Believe It or Not?
Yeah, yeah, like that. And, you know, there's some sideshow and stuff like that there. And,
is it cursed?
No, this one's not cursed, but the business is going down, and the father and the owner of this business is trying to figure out how to bring it back and make it better.
Does he curse it?
Daughter is this, like, just young, pretty little thing that's sort of been, you know, she's not afraid of any of these people because she's been around them her whole life. The oddities are normal to her. So the rest of society finds her a little odd, but, you know, she's like, they have a wolf man, and he gives her good, like, life advice, things like that. The wolf man falls in love with another of the sideshow attraction ladies. I don't remember which one. And so he was, like, run off. But anyway.
Hmm.
So the father's trying to find how to make this business good again because it's just going to start to go under. His daughter is a mermaid. Is a mermaid, you know, when you see the ones in the, like, think Vegas, you know, underwater mermaid dancers. She does that. And he actually started selling private late-night shows to creepy old men, and she would perform naked.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so he was exploiting his daughter. They never touched her or anything, but he was exploiting his daughter to make things better. And at another point in the book, a young girl washes up on shore dead, so he takes her and turns her into Fish Girl. Do you remember House of a Thousand Corpses? Fish Boy? That was Rainn Wilson's character. So he cut off the body and then sewed it to a fish.
Uh-huh.
And someone recognizes the girl and then reports it and stuff like that. But, yeah, so then the whole end, the business goes up in flames, and the little girl the young daughter gets away from her creepy father. And I was trying to figure out, and the little girl has I keep saying little girl like she's 12. No, she's old enough to go off and live her own life. The daughter also falls in love with the local boy. He's the one who found the body. Knows the person who finds the body, whatever. So it's been a year and a half since I read this, and I read a lot. So sometimes stories get a little muddled in my head. I more remember how I felt reading the book than, like, a lot of detail. But I enjoyed this one a lot. And I was thinking for the creepy father, who becomes more and more manic as the book goes, and that's Jack Nicholson.
All right.
Maybe, possibly. The boy that ends up being her love interest, I was thinking the kid who played Teen Wolf, cannot remember his name, but he's adorable and very, very, like, sweet looking. So I like him for that. And the little girl, oh my gosh, the daughter is very, like, someone who can be vulnerable and almost sprite-like, but is still intelligent. And the first person that came to mind was Anya Taylor-Joy, and I know we talked a lot about her last episode, but she has a good mix of vulnerability and strength, and I liked that. So that's pretty much where I landed on the three, like, plot point characters.
Fair enough. James?
Hang on, I gotta look something up because Samantha said reminded me of someone who I want to cast in my comic. So I gotta find the, I'll look right there. This guy would be perfect. And so would the girl, too. So that works out great. Okay, so for my comic, I want to go with something called Crimson from Wildstorm Comics. Done by an amazing guy named Humberto Ramos. I'm probably mispronouncing that. I don't care. So the essential storyline is this kid is turned into a vampire against his will.
Okay.
He does not want to be it. He's having a real tough time letting go of his humanity. He keeps wanting to go to his family to let them know he's okay because they think he's dead.
Right.
at the same time, he gets kind of caught up in the middle of this war of good versus evil. And he ends up helping the good more than the evil because he doesn't want to be a vampire. And he's under the assumption that if he helps them, then he can return to humanity.
Gotcha.
It's a really great comic with a lot of weird stuff in it. But that comic led me to other comics like Preacher and things like that. For the main guy, Alex, I want to cast the dude from 13 Reasons Why. He played Clay Jensen. His name is Dylan Minetti.
Oh, and the guy that I thought of was Tyler Posey. All right. So, yeah, go ahead.
You go. And then for his love interest and kind of the one of the leaders of the forces of good, from 13 Reasons Why, is Amy Hargreaves. She's the redhead who played the girl who killed herself in 13 Reasons Why.
Swing and a miss.
What? It's my casting. Yeah, I think those two would be great as the lead roles in a Crimson movie. It was kind of short-lived, so you could probably take like the first three issues and the last three issues and kind of mesh them together and probably make a decent movie out of it.
That's fair.
You know a movie that I would actually like to see made, but it would have to be animated, and you turned me on to this comic, Danny. I Hate Fairyland.
Oh, dude, I was just thinking about that. I was like, I don't know.
That's the one you recommended to me.
Dude, I Hate Fairyland is so fucking fun.
I would want it to be animated just so there's no possible way that they can't not do something.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
And then all you have to do is cast the voices, and I don't even care. I just think it would be the funniest, best animated adult movie ever made.
It's just so fucking wonderful. Yeah. It is just so beautifully chaotic, and God, it takes the whole concept of like a fairy tale land and just shoves an axe right
so
up at ass. It's so beautiful. Gert is just one of my favorite comic book characters I've come across in a long time. It's like, oh, I get it.
So this was fun, but last week we also talked about if we had time, we would begin to lay out a potential movie for
Menstruata.
And we've got about a half an hour left.
No.
We've talked about this particular character off and on over the last year, I think.
Probably a little bit more than that, actually.
And it is... So, to kind of recap, Menstruata is this queen overlord of...
A post-apocalyptic world.
No,
we kind of gave her a wasteland.
She's kind of built up a town and taken in people, and she's put them to work. And she's also allowed people to be eaten, to become food.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this whole great mythos about her army of female warriors that wield a staff-like...
Tampoon.
Yeah, a staff-like weapon that we called a tampoon. And there's all these great characters that we've put in this world.
We'll call them Pattis. How about that? The army of Pattis with their tampoons.
Pattis? Oh, my God.
we had a sort of a nightclub. So when new people are brought in
mm-hmm.
to serve in this world, they have to go through an audition process at this nightclub.
Yep.
And if they don't cut mustard, they get turned over to Dancing Tan.
Meats and Tans.
Who is essentially the butcher mm-hmm. for the entire town.
Yeah. Dancing Dans, Meats and Tans.
And we had the partnership between the character of myself and the character of Bryce, who go out and find these people and bring them back.
Didn't Jim end up being just like the
Jim
dancing
the
monkey?
No, he was the nightclub owner.
That's it,
He was in charge of who lived and who became food.
Hmm. Yeah.
And he was...
That's right.
He was this smiling, just sick, psychopathic bastard that we came up with.
Uh-huh.
And Jim loved the character.
Not going to lie, it helps to be, like, you know, a part of the ground floor of this story concept, because our characters are pretty solid.
Jim also came up with the whole backstory for Menstrata. I mean, we had, like, a loose one, but he really came up with...
Yeah. He came back and was like, bam, 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 this is what happens. And we're like,
okay.
Yes!
That's perfect.
So, I would love to see a graphic novel of this made. And we've toyed with the idea. The problem is none of us can draw worse shit.
No.
We'll find an artist. We just got to do the writing.
Yeah. And I've been through my actual job. I've been learning a lot about script writing and stuff. So more and more, I'm kind of like leaning towards, you know, I don't think it would be too hard to write a treatment.
And honestly, when it comes right down to it, it's also best if you not only do a treatment, but you also do like, a stick figure storyboarding helps.
Yeah.
So if you hand it over to an artist, it's like, okay, this is where the characters are. This is what they're doing. This is what I want to see them doing. And they go, oh, yeah, absolutely, no problem. And they just bust it out. But if you leave it up to their interpretation, you may or may not get what you want, depending on how good your writing is. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, if you just give them dialogue and you show the actions that they're doing, again, even down to stick figures, they can pick up on that and go, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, so going around the room, as it were, we need to cast the lead character.
This is a
And since
room.
It's Samantha's character, I think she gets final say on who plays Menstrata.
Well, yeah.
So, Samantha, who would you cast in the lead role?
If it's a cartoon, me.
Fair enough. No.
Okay. Let's go with the assumption that it's going to be a full-blown
movie.
I know.
Live action. So, we talked about someone who could portray, like, sweet and kind, because you need to have that side if you're ruling a society, and also very, you know, have a sense of justice and can harden themselves enough to carry out said justice. And we were talking about Dakota Johnson because of her portrayal in Suspiria.
Oh, yeah.
But then I had an epiphany, like, the next day, and I thought of Margot Robbie.
Yeah, I think she would do all right.
Well, she's a solid performer. She's done vulnerable. She's done crazy. She's done sexy. So she can mash them all up into that character, and I think she could really pull it off.
Yeah.
She's, physically speaking, I think she's too thin for the character I kind of envision.
Well, and that's the thing about actors and actresses. They lose and gain weight for roles all the time.
Well, and prosthetics are really good these days, so if we needed to make her look a little bit, you know, bulked up.
Yeah.
Got to get them gains, bro.
She's got she's got like a sort of a like, I think she could be super flexible, which means we would get some really interesting fight scenes with her.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I mean, we're going to have Menstrata fight. And I was actually, we were talking about it, I was thinking about, like, what the story would be. And I've got some good ideas. So once we do casting, I think we can kind of leap into story and I think have some fun with that. Dancing Dan.
I'm sticking with my original call, honestly. I think Jim Carrey is fucking spot on.
Jim Carrey would be fantastic as Dancing Dan.
Yeah.
Because he could do all the moves, and he's got that face that could just, like, super wide, psychotic grins.
Mm-hmm. It's like, happy to serve you.
And he can do crazy laughs, too.
Like, oh, yeah.
I would really love to hear a Dancing Dan, like a laugh, like a...
Yeah.
I mean, that would just be the greatest creepy laugh. Like, every time he laughs, you...
Pound of loin.
Chill.
Like, everyone in the audience's sphincter just tightens when he laughs.
Yeah, but they love the character. Every time he's on screen, they're just like, oh, shit's gonna get real here.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sticking with my original casting call for that one, because I, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, that's about fucking perfect.
Character I'd like to see for myself, I want to have, like, an air of mystery.
Vin Diesel?
No, fuck no.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa?
No.
Good, because at least you know not better.
No, I want someone who can is clearly tough, but there's like an air of mystery. Like you don't know if you can trust this character, especially since he keeps bringing people to this town to either get slaughtered or serve Menstrata.
Yeah.
And I want to go with Taylor Kitsch from Friday Night Lights, the show.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
I'll have to look him up.
He also played Gambit in Wolverine Origins. You have no clue.
I do remember his face, but that's about the only time I think I've ever seen him.
Yeah, that's pretty much the last thing I remember.
Right, trying to go for the dashing rogue, are you there, Jim?
Yeah. He was also Gambit.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, he said.
Oh,
that.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. over Dan's, I didn't hear it. I apologize. And did you say?
So Jennifer? since they're not here, we can cast them for them. So who would we cast as the big gym / nightclub owner?
I already told you, Jack Black.
You love Jack Black as Big Jim.
Well, come on, let's face it. It would fit.
You know who
it's
else
perfect.
Would fit?
And I would love to see him do that role because he'd have to be kind of a sadistic fuck, but he would have an outer appearance of somebody you could be buddies with, you know?
And here's the thing. I'm going to throw out another one who I think would do it and surprise the hell out of people. Mm. Josh Gad.
Who's that?
Josh Gad was in Murder on the Orient Express. He was...
He's been in a bunch of things, but his...
Yeah, a ton of stuff.
His breakout was The Book of Mormon as Elder Cunningham.
But he was also...
Either of these things
he
you
was
are
also
saying.
Olaf, the voice of Olaf in Frozen.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. Gad. Yeah. Okay, I was thinking Gad. I'm like, what? Okay, yes.
I think
okay,
he would be
okay,
fantastic
be okay
as the nightclub guy.
I think he would do
and
all
again,
right.
And again, he could pull off that skeevy.
He yeah. could, definitely.
He could totally pull off
like,
the skeevy.
If Jack Black passed on us, yeah. I'd be okay with that.
So then that just leaves my partner in crime.
Again,
Bryce.
We already talked about this, Keanu Reeves. It's an easy sell. And you know Bryce is on board, so it's not like you really got to argue with it.
I forgot we said Keanu Reeves.
Yep, Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
We just don't give him a lot of lines.
No, no, no. He's mostly just the body that stands there and you go, I'm sorry.
He just holds guns.
Uh-huh.
That's all he
does. You know what we need to do?
Hmm.
We need to get pictures of all these actors and we need to put out like an MCU level poster and just put it everywhere and just will this into existence.
Okay, well.
Just fake it until it's made?
Here's
yes.
the thing. There is another bit of casting we have to do.
Oh.
But I want you to wait on it because here's the story idea I have, okay?
Okay.
So we open the movie with Menstrata victorious on the last battle.
Okay.
Like she's just killed like an army of people and she's
like
stumbles
you do.
Like the camera would rise up from the dirt, like uh-huh. it's at dirt level and rises up enough to where her leg stomps down and it's just covering in blood and we rise up and we we get our first shot of a younger Menstrata, and she's just defeated an army, and she's decided she's had enough. She wants to build a new society.
Does she build it on the corpses?
Yeah.
Good.
I just had another casting idea.
For who?
Menstrata.
Okay.
Since you said younger Menstrata, I was thinking an older one, Cameron Diaz.
She would be an older Menstrata, but I don't...
That's what I said.
No.
I saw her in Night and Day, and I don't think she could pull off the action beats that we're looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, I don't think she could either, but her image was just works. But
now,
her
if
acting...
If we got Cameron Diaz from The Mask, I might be on board with it, but everything
who's
after that...
Who's the girl from Sucker Punch?
Honestly...
Oh, I know who you're talking. Yeah, I don't know her name, but yeah, she'd be good.
Yeah, she'd work. I was honestly, when we first started talking about Menstrata, the person I saw play her was Monica Bellucci, the Italian chick from Matrix Reloaded. She's been in a bunch of other stuff too, but yeah, she just has a look about her of, well, a leader and a warrior, just kind of wrapped in the gorgeous body of a woman.
If she hadn't done Wonder Woman, I would suggest Gal Gadot.
Hmm?
But I think it would be too close.
Yeah, yeah. No, and again, that's why when I first started thinking about it, honestly, I threw the vote out for Monica Bellucci for Menstrata.
So, fast forward, like, say, 5 years, and here's this burgeoning town that's been built up. She's got all these things working. People are farming. People are working. But there's still the skeeviness of the fact that, you know, people are coming and they're eating them, essentially, for protein, but also to help fertilize crops.
It's a protein shake.
Cut to, we have to have an antagonist, and I think there is a man, because of course it would be a man.
Man.
Who is seeing how successful this town is and how prosperous, and wants it for himself.
Spartacus.
So he's built up a new army, and maybe he's got some history with Menstrata. Maybe they've faced off before and she kicked his ass and left him with a scar or two.
Well, you know.
Maybe a lack of a penis.
Emotional scars.
Well, we can't call him Smoothie, because that already belongs to another comic book character.
But he basically builds an army, comes in, and really smartly takes out Menstrata's army.
Okay.
We'll call him Dimples.
Dimples McFadden.
For some reason, Dimples works in my head. I don't know.
Dimples Faptor.
Oh, maybe he's named Dimples because she gave him dimples.
That's like exactly what I was
scars
thinking.
From where he stabbed him. Yeah.
With an ice pick both sides of his face.
So basically, he assassinates all of her army and is able to run her out but keep most of the town there.
Mm-hmm.
But Dancing Dan goes with her.
Why would I go with her? Why don't I just start murdering all the soldiers of the people who betrayed my Menstrata? And just start serving them to their own army.
Because maybe you're not that tough.
I don't have to be tough.
I have to
be smart.
I don't think he'd be that smart.
He's not going to miss a soldier
but
or
I
two
think,
or
I
20.
Think Dancing Dan has also got the connections.
Probably. I mean, if I'm in the meat business of selling people, I got to be doing something right, because you don't get away with that shit for very long.
But the nightclub owner character stays, because he's kind of like, I kind of picture him a little bit like Varys from Game of Thrones. Like, he knows all
just
the
just a little
things
weaselly,
going
but...
But he's also like the calming influence of the people.
Right.
Like, he's the mouthpiece of Menstrata.
Don't worry, Sam. I'll always roll with you.
Yeah.
See, that's where mine and Bryce's character come in, because we could run across you two in the desert and take you to, like, another town to help build up an army to take back our town.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, it's a really rough story, but I think it's...
There's something to stand on.
It gives us a journey. It gives us action beats.
It's more than us just, you know, posturing, playing down by the creek, you know. Yeah.
And, you know, I think
it's something.
I think one of the big things, too, is during this journey, Menstrata learns that she doesn't always have to do shit on her own. Yeah. There's people who believe in her and will fight by her side.
That's fair.
Who aren't women.
That's doubly fair. Yeah, I can get into that.
So who would we cast as Dimples?
Billy Crystal?
Oh, Menstrata, you look marvelous.
You look marvelous tonight.
Worst
He's
casting.
Mostly dead.
Oh, come on, it would be beautiful and you know it.
Can we cast the guy who played Buffalo Bill?
Stoudemire.
Yeah. He's a pretty solid fucking guy. Honestly, I really loved him in the Monk series. It was really, really difficult for me to not see him as Wild Bill the first couple of times watching that show. Especially every time he's like, Monk.
Oh, you
like,
know who would be great?
Would you fuck me?
And I just thought of this. This guy would make a great fucking Dimples, and I know he could do Sinister. Timothy Oliphant.
Yes.
You'll have to square for me.
Yes.
Let's see. He was Hitman. He was the villain in...
Justified.
Yeah. He was whatever his name is in Justified. He was the main bad guy in Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. And don't get me wrong, he would fit the bill.
Dude, he's got the build. He's got the sinister. We prosthetic some dimples in him.
I don't know.
I'm so down for it.
The only reason...
Tom Hardy.
Now, that I could
he's
get into a
little
bit more.
He's already got the dimples.
That I could get into a bit more. But, again, the one thing I noticed about a good villain casting... The one thing I've noticed about good villain casting, though, is sometimes it's better not to cast somebody who's already done it multiple times. And
he's
let's be fair, Tom Hardy's done it multiple times. The guy's character in Justified is really on the fence. And again, Live Free, Die Hard. He's already kind of played that bad guy before. I mean, like, look at... Now, here's just a for instance for you and something to kind of mull over. Look at Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Name one more movie where he was a bad guy. Like, the villain of a movie, aside from Dark Knight.
Oh, no, and I know what you're saying. I'm totally in agreement.
Exactly.
That doesn't necessarily
But what
mean
I'm saying
that...
is it takes everybody by surprise, and it gives an actor an opportunity to step outside their norm, as opposed to, like, if you give a villain character to somebody who's already done it a couple of times, what you're going to see is you're going to see repeat of that same
then
character.
Then I'm going to throw you a curveball and throw at
Again,
you
Billy Crystal's still a better call.
Alan Rickman.
He's already
played nothing
been
but
guy.
Villains.
I know, and every time it was Alan Rickman doing a villain again. I love him as Snape, but I couldn't help but see Hans Gruber in everything he did. And again...
See, I disagree. I think each villain he played made his own. Same thing could be seen with Tim Curry, who played villains
Alan
multiple
Rickman
times.
Alan Rickman in Galaxy Quest. Not a bad
See, but that was beautiful. That's probably one of my favorite roles he's ever done because it was stepping away from what he's used
but
to doing.
But he's still playing fucking Alan Rickman.
Yeah, pretending to be an alien creature on a ship, pretending to be his character from a fake TV show that he shot like fucking 30 years ago. That character has got levels. And it's beautiful.
No, he's just playing Alan Rickman. Frustrated actor. That's all he's doing.
Yeah, but at least it's not him pretending to be a villain again.
But he's still a villain.
Mm. And again,
I don't know. I disagree. I think if you
I
get
noticed.
An actor, I don't think you should judge it based on, oh, that's all he's ever done. I think you've got to look at an actor and say, can he do what we're looking for?
But at the same time, you're also...
As if we're going to make this movie.
Right, no shit. But the big issue that I run into is it's when you have somebody who's done it a couple of times and they were what the director was looking for, they tend to have that bleed over in every other bad guy character they do. As opposed to somebody who's never done it before, you genuinely start with a fresh slate. It's not just this guy that I did for this show. It's not just this guy that I did for this movie. It's a completely different character. It's a different creature. Like, especially if you take somebody who's used to doing comedy or romance or things of that nature or drama even to some degree, and you slap them in an action film as a bad guy, you're going to be able to see if they have what it takes to pull that monster off. Or they're just going to suck ass, and then in which case you're going to see that at the casting and move into another direction. But I like the idea of something that people haven't seen
what
before.
What if in the casting they nail it, but once you get them on set, not even close?
Well, that's the beauty part about saying, we fucked up.
You're talking about like 5 minutes. Yeah, but by then you're already in millions of dollars, and you've got to halt everything to recast.
Again, I would just rather see.
It happens all the time, though.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not saying it doesn't, but I would rather go in knowing full well
that you're going to get that same character that you saw in that one movie a long time ago.
I'm going to get the character I want.
And again, I don't necessarily know that that's what we're shooting for.
So I've got a completely screwball idea.
Fire.
One, who says Dimples has to be a man?
Well, come on. It's Menstrata versus, penile envy.
I mean, that's... yeah,
I think at this point it would be vaginal envy.
Like,
yeah, there we go.
Okay, so say we have a different bad guy. What about, like, Rebel Wilson? She has dimples.
I would like to see her take on a serious villain and see how she does.
I would like to see her take on a serious role and see how she does.
Not going to lie, you're not wrong. But at the same time, I do like her. I just, again, I want to see what else she's capable of. I would not want Rebel Wilson as she has been in her other movies. I would want her as a new monster. I want to see the vindictive side of her. I want to see the malicious side.
This is getting exactly what we're talking about. I don't think Rebel Wilson could pull off
a believable menacing
character. I would want to see her do something dramatic before I could believe that she could do something sinister.
I don't know. I think if the writing's there and the direction's there, I think you can do a lot with somebody who has the ability to do one thing really well. I think it's not too difficult to transfer that and basically change their mentality. And again, the only reference I'm bringing up is Heath Ledger. You know, they basically told him, hey, you're going to be the Joker. You're going to be the baddest, meanest, most sadistic fuck on the planet. And he was like, I think I can handle that. And he did.
Actually, that's not at fucking all what colors. Happened.
Well, no, but I'm just
they
saying.
They said, we're going to cast you as the Joker, and he went darker than they expected. He scared people on set.
And it's beautiful because he'd never done it before. But until he was given that opportunity to pull that side of him out, everyone was going to see him as romantic nightman.
Ooh,
you know?
Ooh. Hand raised.
Fire.
Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
Done.
I'm gonna say, while I love the casting,
don't get me wrong, I love
it. It goes to what Danny's complaining about.
Yes, it does. It would be Heisenberg all over again.
Sides though, because I want someone that I know is just gonna fucking nail it.
So do I, but I got poo-pooed.
Because you're a poo-poo.
No, I see both sides. Like, you want to get someone who's never done that kind of stuff before. Yes, he's done sinister, and you know he can do sinister and crazy, but he's not done this kind of sinister and crazy. He was a good, mild-mannered guy who was pushed to extremes by extenuating circumstances. This is someone who's just straight-up nuts.
And I'll give you...
And at least that would be something, but again, I'm... And don't get me wrong, I love the idea of Bryan Cranston as the main antagonist just out of sheer principle, because he does make... He has a good screen presence, in general. I will say in movies like Godzilla, they kind of either underutilized him or poorly directed him. Either way, he was kind of useless.
Both.
In that movie. But...
And can we go back to Heath Ledger as the Joker?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I knew when they cast him as the Joker, I had no worries about him playing the Joker. Because he pulled off Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, that movie was so good.
That's fair. And I give
and this
you that.
This goes to what we were saying about Rebel Wilson. I would totally believe her capable of doing a sinister, dark role like what we're talking about for Dimples if she could pull off a believable dramatic. But she has not even tried to step out of the comedy.
Well, we don't necessarily know that she hasn't tried. She just hasn't gotten cast in anything.
No, she hasn't tried.
Well, she might not want to.
Well, that may
be. And that's fine.
She's making money hand over fist doing what she's doing.
No, that's fine. Right?
and the other thing that I would have against Rebel Wilson is if we're going to have Dimples and Menstrata fight, Rebel Wilson is not going to be able to pull off the kind of fight sequence. It's going to be the most boring.
She's a slugger. She's a one or two hit fucking.
I want to see a fight with Menstrata where you actually believe she might lose.
Hmm. Well, again, you know,
so if we're
powerhouse.
Having, if we're yeah. having someone scrap with her, they've not only got to believably pull off power, but pull off, you know, a fight style that gives Menstrata a run for her money. Because I really feel like Menstrata is using everything. She's using, you know, martial arts. She's using gymnastics. She's using weapons. Everything in her...
It's so funny. I always...
That her mind and body can
it's
pull
so,
off.
And it's interesting to me because, honestly, again, when we talked about Menstrata in the past, I always just saw her as a scrapper. Just somebody you didn't want to fuck with because she was indestructible, but she was kind of a shit fighter.
When we discussed her origins,
yeah.
We talked about her being, she was being experimented on and trained underground by the government.
So gotcha. She's got, you don't want to fuck with her because she's going to kill you seven ways from Sunday. So I want to see someone who, when they get on screen and they actually fight, and see, that's the thing, when she gets banished, she's got to lose that first time.
Yeah. Well, and again, we're also not laying rise to the idea that the fights that she would be getting into are not fair. They're not one-on-one either. They're one-on-20 or one-on-15 or 6-on-5, you know. But we just said at the beginning
scene she's defeated a whole army.
Yeah, so she might have been down, the last one standing, but I highly doubt she was the only one.
That's why I think it would
one.
Be interesting if she goes down and gets banished from a one-on-one fight.
Mm.
And we've already seen her take out an army.
Mm.
The stakes are really risen.
Mm. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I see where you're going with it, and I can agree with it to some degree, but at the same time, it does require a bit more suspended believability that any one person could take down somebody who had decimated an army. I mean,
there is, don't get cocky.
I guess, but at the same time, it's like, well,
she's rested on her laurels for roughly 5 years. And I think, too, if he comes in and emotionally breaks her before he physically breaks her. Or mentally breaks her. Like, he's learned from their last encounter, and he's planned this for, you know, 5-6 years. This is a guy. See, this is a villain that has to be know his limitations, overcome those, and be aware of what his adversary is capable of, and be prepared to go in and knock her down a peg or two before he knocks her down a peg or two. And I think Samantha is right. Here's a hero who's essentially defeated everyone she's come across, and she's gotten cocky, and she's gotten lazy.
Yeah, but that usually doesn't overrule experience when it comes right down to it. And again, if she's strong enough and sturdy enough to handle an army at her best, she can handle one jack-off at her worst. You know what I mean? It requires too much suspended disbelief. Again, I would understand if she got beat the second, or so she beats the army, and the second time she just straight up gets overrun. Or something dear to her is held in ransom at that point. So you're not defeating her physically the first time. You're defeating her on a set of, okay, well, I don't have
Hence
a choice.
That's why I said breaking her emotionally or mentally.
But you can't break her physically. So at that rate, you're either going at her full guns blazes and you manage to get lucky with a couple of lucky shots, maybe.
Well, I might believe it. A distracted, broken mind is not going to be at their best physically.
True, but it will also be at its most violent if pushed.
Yeah, but you have to push in just the right direction to get the result you want. So it is a calculated risk.
And
that
also, if you take her out, if you manage to physically hurt her before she gets a chance to get her footing under her.
See, and again, I would almost argue that it would make more sense for me if you showed her as the badass monster that she can be. And then she builds up her town, she gets invested in the people that she protects, and then that becomes threatened, and that's why she gets exiled, and those who are closest to her kind of, you know, sneak out the fucking door behind her, and then she rebuilds, resets, and then reattacks, and that's when you'd have the final standoff where it's his
Which
army
is
versus
really
her.
Which is really funny, because that's what I said in the beginning of all this.
Except you wanted her and them to fight as like an epic round two. And it's like, no, once she gets through the army, she fucking decimates him.
You guys realize we're basically reconstructing Khaleesi.
Essentially, but better. Because without a shit ending, spoiler alert.
And bloodier.
A lot bloodier.
Well, and also to remember, she gains more power. And we've totally ignored this. She gains major strength during the blood moon, and if he attacks when it's not even the blood moon, she's weakened a bit.
No.
You can't have a movie called Menstrata and not have the blood moon. I'm sorry, you fucking with the story.
Honestly, you could build a lore off of the idea that when she defeated the fucking army of people, the only parts of her that actually got bloodied was her waist down. And that's enough of a lore to build up off of that.
That's true, yeah.
So, except the story that we built up was building her strength during her cycle, so fuck
yeah.
You.
Again, we were also talking hyper rage, but still.
You're messing with the mythos, man.
I'm correcting it.
Jim won't like you correcting it. And let's face it, Jim has final say on all.
Because to be honest, it would actually make for a pretty cool mythos to have a lady who single-handedly destroys an entire army, but the only parts of her that got bloodied was her waist down. That would be pretty gangster. That means she either stomped them all to death or something, but...
Or she has no fucking legs because they were cut off.
Well, that wouldn't make any sense.
And that would change the movie to Stumpy.
Yeah, we're not talking Stump Towns here.
I'm sure we will go round and round with this until it gets made in some form.
I like the idea of, like, stomping heads or something, you know, like...
First person who writes it gets to deem it.
Ready, go!
And go!
Well, considering you're the laziest of us as far as writing goes, I think laziest. We don't have to worry about
bitch. I just have to be motivated.
And is this not motivating enough for you?
Well, when it comes to writing, it's one of those things where I either have to have like an awe-inspired moment of, oh my god, I need to write this down, or I don't. And they
and
don't happen
this,
very often.
And with this, he's going to sit down and go,
no.
You know, I could play guitar instead.
I really could. I could build guitars instead. I have real hobbies.
Well, like I said, I am sure we will continue this saga on and on on because we love this character. And it's so silly.
Come on, Hollywood.
We would
give us
have
a
to
chance.
Turn this in and...
Send us some writers. Something.
Oh my gosh. Dimples. Howard Stern.
Wow. Anyone still want Gilbert Gottfried?
Fucked up. Oh my gosh. Just how bonkers crazy this whole idea is, and that's what's going to make it so great when it
let's
becomes
just,
reality.
Let's throw like, Fart Man out there. Come on.
And
you know?
That was my first thought. I was like, Fart Man. Oh my god, Howard Stern.
That would be his costume too. Like a tattered version of Fart Man.
All kinds of burn holes around.
Yeah. It's brown from the waist down.
Well, and the Strat is red from the waist down. So
see?
There's
see?
Wow. Okay.
Different hole, same explosive reactions.
I am calling this show now. This done. Doctor, call
it's
it.
It's over.
The show died at
time
an
of
hour
death.
And 7 minutes in.
And some change.
Jesus Christ. We can't get a pulse back. Just let it fucking die.
It's still twitching.
Burn
He's,
it.
He has a pet with him named Brown Note.
Oh, make it a brown chihuahua.
No, a little wiener dog. A little
yeah.
Brown dog.
I tried so hard to end it after Brown Note and Dan wouldn't stop talking.
Hey, however, to be fair, Sam was the one who came up with that one.
That's the name of the episode now.
What, Chihuahua Brown named Brown Note?
No, just Brown Note.
Just Brown Note?
Brown Note.
They are really going to be misled as to what the fuck we're talking about. Really
that's,
misled.
That's what happens with most of our titles, though.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
okay, that's fair. Again, I'm calling it. It's done. You can't revive it. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
And now it's lore.
It is now canon.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.